Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 23, 2015. Government spokesman Michael Makuei says President Kiir did not threaten Paganamumu.
We have never threatened anybody. And if he has any threats that he believes that we have stated, then let him produce them.
And U.S. President Barack Obama receives Pope Francis at the White House.
You remind us that the Lord's most powerful message is mercy. And that means welcoming the stranger with empathy and a truly open heart. From the refugee who flees war-torn lands to the immigrant.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makuei denies that President Kiir threatened SPLM Secretary General Paganamumu after Amumu signed compromise peace agreement last month. Makuei also denies that he threatened Amumu. He says the ruling party, SPLM, was disappointed by Amumu's decision to sign the peace agreement on behalf of the former detainees. Makuei says Amumu's membership in the ruling party is now in doubt.
Pagan doesn't want to come. And what I stated, this is what was also stated by His Excellency the President, that there is no way the SPLM would continue to be one again. It will not be one again because the chairman, who is President Salva Kiir, deputy chairman, who is the rebel leader, Riek Machar, and the secretary general, who is Paganamumu, three of them have signed the agreement and there are three separate entities. There is nothing that will bring them again together under one umbrella called the SPLM. So what we are saying is that he will not be the Secretary General again, not him alone, but he and others will no longer be members of the party, but they are free to come and set up their own political party because it is not possible for a Secretary General to sign and share power with his chairman of the party. It's not possible for a first vice chairman of the party to share power with his chairman. This is what we are saying. However, we have never threatened anybody. And if he has any threats that he believes that we have stated, then let him produce them.
Does this mean Pagan is officially dismissed from the party?
This is what is being said now, but officially the party, up to now, the party leadership did not to determine that. This is very clear from the talk of His Excellency the President in his last address to the nation, in which he said the SPLM will not be the same again.
Pagan was giving reasons that he said the party is being hijacked by a group he's referring to as Jiang Council of Elders. What do you know about that group?
These are issues which are being concocted, being created by him, because this Jiang Council of Elders is a social entity which has nothing to do with the government or with the political party. It is a Jiang Community Elders Council, which comprises of elders from different political parties and different political denominations. It has nothing to do with the SPLM as such. And he should be made to understand it that way. We are members of the SPLM and will continue to be members of the SPLM. It is those who have abandoned the SPLM like him who would talk of hijack. Why did he decide to abandon the SPLM? And now he talks of the SPLM being hijacked.
He said the party is now controlled by one tribe, and he was very categorically clear that it is the Jiang elders who are controlling the party.
I'm sorry, I think you must have been misinformed. And what I'm telling you is the clear thing, and you can check it on that. The acting Secretary General now is not a Jiang, for your information.
And with all this, where is the future of this party?
Well, the future of this party, this is not something new. It is something normal. It happens to all the political parties all over the world. And it can be reorganized, and it continues to be a political party. And SPLM will be reorganized, and it will continue to be a majority party.
That's South Sudan's government spokesman, Michael Makuei, speaking with me from Juba earlier today. The The United States is releasing an additional $80 million to help people affected by the conflict in South Sudan, including those who have fled to neighboring countries to escape 20 months of violence. The announcement of the new injection of humanitarian aid from the United States comes nearly a month after both sides in the conflict signed a peace agreement. The U.S. Department of State said in a statement released yesterday that the peace deal presents an opportunity to save lives threatened by violence and return the country to a productive path forward. This latest contribution brings U.S. assistance for South Sudan since the start of the conflict there in December 2013 to more than $1.3 billion. The additional funding will allow aid groups to address the urgent health and nutritional needs of internally displaced persons, refugees seeking asylum in South Sudan, and South Sudanese who are now refugees in neighboring countries. The statement says, the United Nations says more than 1.6 million people are internally displaced in South Sudan, 4.6 million are severely food insecure, and nearly 630,000 are living as refugees in the neighboring country. The State Department says the latest aid funds will also be used to provide services for survivors of gender-based violence and malnourished children. But the United States is warning that aid is only effective if it reaches people in need, and is calling on President Kiir's government and Riek Machar's armed opposition movement to allow humanitarian workers full and unconditional access to vulnerable people in all areas of South Sudan. President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama welcomed Pope Francis to the White House today. In his welcoming address, President Obama said Pope Francis is a living example of Jesus' teaching, which come through in the generosity of his spirit. Obama said the Pope reminds us that our measures as individuals and as a society comes not from power or wealth, but from how well we answer the call to lift up the poor, including immigrants and refugees.
You remind us that the Lord's most powerful message is mercy. And that means welcoming the stranger with empathy and a truly open heart. From the refugee who flees war-torn lands to the immigrant who leaves home in search of a better life.
Pope Francis praised American Catholics for embracing refugees and immigrants. He noted that the United States was founded by immigrants.
American Catholics are committed to building a society which is truly tolerant and inclusive, to safeguarding the rights of individuals and communities, and to rejecting every form of injustice, discrimination.
The Pope arrived at the White House in a simple black Fiat instead of a luxurious limousine. He has drawn the admiration of millions of Americans for stressing the importance of combating poverty, income inequality, and climate change. He is expected to address a joint meeting of the Congress and the first Pope to address both houses of the U.S. legislature. An estimated 2 million Muslim pilgrimage from around the world climb Mount Arafat today, completing high point of the annual pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia. Security has been tight for the event amid numerous regional threats, as Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The pilgrims made their ritual climb up Mount Arafat amid searing heat on the second day of the annual Hajj. Saudi state TV showed the throngs winding their way to the Namira Mosque to hear a sermon by the country's top religious leader. The ritual is said to take place on the hillside where Islam's prophet Muhammad gave his final sermon. In a veiled reference to the Islamic State group, Grand Mufti Abdulaziz al-Sheikh told the gathering that Islam is being torn apart by those who distort what he says is its real message.
إن أعداء الإسلام يكيدون المسلمين يتربصون الدوائر.
He says Islam's enemies are spreading false messages and false beliefs, and they are heretics pretending to be Muslims but not part of the faith. Saudi Interior Ministry spokesman General Mansour Ben Turki told journalists this year's pilgrimage has taken place without incident. He says there have been no acts of terrorism or destruction this year, and security forces have performed well in fending off such threats. Saudi commentator Jamal Khashoggi tells VOA that residents of Mecca have had hundreds of years of experience in hosting the Hajj and are now experts in making it a success. Khashoggi says Saudi officials have also tried in recent years to divorce Islam's highest religious ceremony from politics.
Saudi Arabia been sending the message to the Muslim world that keep politics off the Hajj. And it seems that this began to pay off. When you look at the Muslims now in Mecca, some of them come from regions that is in turmoil, but those people are not fighting in Mecca.
The pilgrims were to spend the night in the valley of Muzdalifah after a slow descent down Mount Arafat. Thursday will mark the end of the annual Hajj as pilgrims sacrifice an animal in a rite said to date back to the prophet Abraham. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And in South Sudan, members of South Sudan Muslim community say they are unable to go to Hajj in Mecca because they cannot afford it. Some South Sudanese Muslims say they cannot even afford to buy a lamb for tomorrow's Eid al-Adha celebrations. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau that South Sudan's economic woes are putting obstacles on the Muslim celebrations.
Muhammad Hassan Marajan is the Deputy Secretary for South Sudan's Islamic Council.
Al-Hajj mukallifana.
He says South Sudan's shaky economy, the high cost of living, and a weak local currency have made it difficult for South Sudanese Muslims to pay the 16,000 South Sudanese pounds it costs to travel to Mecca. Hassan says the Saudi authorities determine the number of pilgrims from each country who can go to Hajj. This year, the Saudi authorized 1,130 South Sudanese pilgrims to attend the annual gathering in Mecca, but not all of them can go. 80-year-old Said Marjan says he traveled to Mecca to perform Hajj in 2003. Marjan says that at the time the Sudanese government sponsored 100 Muslims from what was then Southern Sudan to travel to Saudi Arabia for the annual pilgrimage. Marajan says he can't perform Hajj anymore because of the cost, but given another chance, he would like to go to Mecca again. Marajan says many families in Wau say not only can they not afford to perform Hajj, but they are unable to even slaughter a sheep for tomorrow's feast of Eid al-Adha. Eid al-Adha is a Muslim festival to commemorate the willingness of Abraham to follow Allah or God's command to sacrifice his son Ismail. Muslims around the world observe this event. But 43-year-old Hawa Muhammad Osman says she will have to celebrate Eid without lamb. She says one sheep costs more than £600, and she simply cannot afford that expenditure. But she says she will celebrate Eid spiritually and has already bought some gifts for her children. 37-year-old Kaltoum Suleiman says with the meager salary she earns as a government employee in Wau, she too will have to forgo a lamb dinner. Suleiman says it takes her a month to earn what butchers are charging for lamb this year. She says she is celebrating by buying clothes for her children, and she says she hopes that next year she and South Sudan in general will be better off and able to celebrate Eid in a traditional way. Hajj is one of the five pillars of the Islam faith. adult Muslims are required to perform Hajj at least once in their lifetime if they have the physical and financial ability to do so. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese in the diaspora are concerned about the future of the country. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
have you ever bribed someone to get something? Why or why not?
No, I have not bribed someone before. And the reason is, I need not to push somebody to the wall to get something. The best thing is you have to do the right thing. So I have never bribed somebody in terms of getting something from the person, no.
Have I given bribe? Yes. Why did I give bribe? Because the system is wrong. Do I want to give bribe? No. Would I be able to get what I wanted if I didn't give him that money? No, I wouldn't have. So in a sense, I believe that bribery and corruption is not necessarily a personal desire. It's a systemic problem.
Personally, I don't think I've ever, but someone has done it for me, yeah, to get something I wanted. But personally, I have never bribed someone to get something.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Minister of Environment this weekend presented a 10-year National Environmental Policy Program to the Parliament for ratification. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
It's the first environmental government policy ever drafted by South Sudan's government aimed at protecting and preserving the country's environment. Minister of Environment Deng Deng Hock.
The strategic goal of the National Environment Policy 2015 to 2025 is to ensure the protection, conservation, and sustainable use of the natural resources of South Sudan without compromising the tenets of intergenerational equity. The policy will pursue and achieve to develop laws, regulations, and guidelines to ensure sustainable management of the environment as well as the prudent utilization of natural resources.
The policy contains chapters on climate change, management of resources, corporate social and environmental responsibilities, and environmental planning, among others. Hock says the policy should help protect the environment from the threats of population growth, habitat destruction, pollution, and logging, which leads to forest fragmentation. Hock says when ratified, the policy will also
establish mechanisms to promote partnership working and coordination, monitoring and evaluation of environmental strategies and programs among the stakeholders.
South Sudan has no policy governing the use of its natural resources, despite dangerous pollutants from oil production and charcoal burning. Earlier, Hock held a consultative meeting with environmental activists to help develop a short-term national plan of action to reduce the effects of climate change in the country. The minister says human activities are negatively impacting the climate.
It is affecting the quantity of water that we have in the country in terms of the amount of rain that is coming down. The fact that many rivers are drying is an indication that climate change is having negative effects. In some parts of the country, the rain is too little, and that leads to failure of crops. It is the activities of human beings that are accelerating the deterioration of the climate system.
The 78-page document has been sent to the Parliamentary Committee of Lands for further scrutiny before it is presented to the full parliament. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A U.S.-based non-profit, the Coalition of Advocates for South Sudan, says it is focusing on supporting the diaspora. The group organized its first annual conference for peace and reconciliation this past weekend. The one-day conference took place in the Midwest city of Des Moines, Iowa, where the late Dr. John Garang received his education. About 300 people attended this year's event.
Our vision is for a South Sudan that embraces unity, peace, reconciliation, love, God, influence, hope, heart, change in our hearts, diversity, build self-confidence, overcome our obstacles.
We need to agree to disagree. One person's interest should not override interests of others. And we should consider as individuals, will my actions benefit the community rather than just myself?
So our vision statement says that we want a reconciled society that embraces diversity, living in peace and prosperity. And our mission statement says that we would like there to be platforms for inclusive dialogue and actions to foster forgiveness and reconciliation, national identity formation and social cohesion, and equitable development through the establishment of collaborative and integrated mechanisms.
A nation that has accountability in all aspects of our, the management of our affairs, with justice and peace, and justice being like everybody actually within the country, we guarantee that everybody, there is nobody that is being mistreated, and everybody that needs help get the most constructive help. Forgiveness cannot happen without accountability.
We would like to develop trust and acceptance of each other. We would like acceptance of mistakes and seek for forgiveness every time we go wrong. We should work very hard to overcome tribalism.
That the root causes of conflicts are addressed, that there is justice and accountability, and the basic needs are provided to the people. There is education, the youth, the jobs for the youth, human rights respected, the women respected, and children are getting their education.
And how to achieve that is through healing and reconciliation, given all we have been through. Reform governance and security system, freedom of speech and press. We also said permanent constitution, conflict prevention and intervention measures.
We've been listening to members of the South Sudanese diaspora gathered in Des Moines, Iowa, expressing their vision for the future of South Sudan and their action plan on how to achieve long-lasting, sustainable peace and development in their country. Thousands of girls in the Horn of Africa are forced to marry while still being underage. Marta van der Wolf reports for VOA from Gondra, where the local government and UNICEF are organizing large awareness campaigns to change the attitude of rural communities.
60-year-old Hibis Ababayu from the town of Gondor was about to be married to a 28-year-old man when she was just 13. Last year, her parents again tried to marry her to another man. Hibis says her parents did not even tell her about the marriage, but her friends had overheard the arrangements and informed her. She says that immediately when she heard, she reported it to the school principal and to the lead teacher of the girls' club. They spoke to the police. After they negotiated with her parents, they managed to cancel the marriage arrangements. The girls' club Hibis joined in school is a place where information is provided to girls about child marriage through awareness interventions. Especially for rural communities, child marriage is the social norm. The local government says that raising awareness and changing the attitude of the community is the biggest challenge. The police, religious leaders, and development partners such as United Nations Children's Fund are involved in trying to change the mindset about child marriage and eliminate all forms of child marriage by 2025. UNICEF program worker Zemzem Shakur says child marriage has several consequences for the girl's life.
The first one is easily they are forced to drop out from school, which shapes their destiny to be a housewife or to be in a very different or vulnerable situation. The other one is the health consequence, because they don't get treatment easily, and they may not also have information where to get services.
One in five girls in Ethiopia are married before the age of 18. In Gondor, a northern region, almost half the underage girls are married, even though the legal age is set at 18. Hibis feels lucky to have been rescued. She says many of her friends are already married. She says the thinking in the community is to marry off children at a very early age, since they do not see why girls should get an education or how they can become somebody. One of the awareness campaigns in Gondor is an afternoon of musical performances on the main square. The event attracts large crowds, and the message appears to come across to the audience of mostly boys. They say they agree girls should not get married before the age of 18. Solomon Asefa is one of them. He says girls first need to be physically ready to get married, then they have to be educated so that they can be what they want to be. Hibis is now in 8th grade school. She hopes her parents will allow her to attend university if she keeps receiving good grades. 14-year-old Abeba Ayele was less fortunate. She lives in a village an hour outside Gondor. She was forced into a marriage last year and now has a 6-month-old baby. Abeba says it is difficult to deal with the new attitude from her peers. She says everyone was gossiping about her when she was pregnant, and it gave her psychological problems. Abebe has registered for school again, but is not sure if she can attend, as she does not have the funds to look after herself and her baby. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Gondor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuay denies President Kiir threatened the SPLM Secretary General Pagana Mum after Mum signed the compromise peace deal in Addis Ababa last month on behalf of former detainees. McQuay also denied issuing any threats to Mum. The United States is sending an additional $80 million to help the tens of thousands affected by the South Sudan conflict, including those who fled to neighboring countries. The humanitarian aid, which goes directly to aid groups working in South Sudan, comes about a month after the leaders of the two warring parties signed that peace deal. And finally, President Barack Obama welcomed Pope Francis to the White House today. President Obama said Pope Francis is a living example of Jesus' teachings, that it comes through in the gentleness of his words and the generosity of his spirit. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Kwon Kel by Kang JJ. We've been listening to Kang JJ with the song Kwon Kel. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.